Digging Deeper Without the Cold Face, the podcast that shares the incredible stories of the talented and passionate people in our industry. And it's now time for this week's episode of Digging Deeper Without the Cold Face.
It's your host, Jessica Rouse.
All right. Hello, everyone. We're here at the HSEC conference for a live recording of the Digging Deeper with At the Coalface podcast. We've got a bit of an audience going on. How's our day going, guys? Can we have a bit of a cheer, a bit of noise? Woo! Yeah. It's always fun taking the podcast on the road, and this is our first time doing it live, which is very exciting. And today I'm joined by three young, energetic mining employees here in the Hunter Valley, all with various roles. So we have Georgia O'Neill, who's an Environment and Community Officer at Glencore's United Wombo Joint Venture. Give us a wave. Sienna Linforth, who's an underground mechanical engineer at Dartbrook in Muswellbrook, and Jules Harris-Payne, who's a graduate environment officer with Bloomfield at Rix's Creek. Round of applause for our guests, everyone. Now, we're going to have a bit of a chat about your careers in mining, but I want to start with a question for all of you. Depending on what news story you read, from which publication or which study, some say 3/4 of Gen Z believe the mining industry does more harm than good, but there's also an overwhelming opinion from some that more and more young people are filtering into the industry. Georgia, what are your thoughts on that?
I personally think that there's been a bit of a shift in young people, and I believe that we're developing a bit more autonomy in that space. And if you take the politics side of it, less people are voting with how their parents voted, you know, like we're taking a bit more ownership and autonomy over that. So I'd like to think that those outside influences about the harm that the mining industry can cause and does cause to the environment. But we also, hopefully the youth are hearing that other side of it, that we do those good things as well. And I hope that news can get through, and that people are going to become a bit more autonomous in their decisions and hopefully taking the real information and not just the propaganda and the media. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, actually. Like, I think we are a generation past just voting how our parents voted and taking what they think on board and not really exploring anything else. Jules, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. And it's giving people a platform to come up with their own ideas about how they feel about something in the industry rather than being told. So
yeah definitely. Exactly. Positive. And Sienna?
Yeah, I think that we've got maybe a lot of people coming into the industry, but I think there's probably also a pretty broad attitude of a lot of people who say they're going to come into mining and do a couple years and then settle down. So I think retaining some of that technical skill is something that as an industry we could probably improve on. And I think maybe to do that, it's just about fostering those relationships and sharing that, maybe breaking the stigma of mining around not being able to have a balanced lifestyle. It's probably something that the Hunter Valley does really well. We have so many communities that really embrace mining being sort of the core of that function. And we're able to have that really awesome balanced lifestyle while also being involved in a really cool industry.
Yeah, exactly. And on that, what else, Jules, do you think we could do to make the industry more attractive to that younger generation coming through?
At Bloomfield, we do a school tour there, which is actually built into the Year 11 and 12 curriculum. So we try and actually integrate a sort of a deep-rooted understanding and coming to your own conclusions. So you can... It gives you a platform, I guess, to formulate your own ideas, and then you're not sort of being told what to think.
Yeah, and take us back to, Jules, you were telling me a couple of weeks ago that how you got into the industry, it's kind of like a full circle moment because you got introduced in the senior years of school.
Yeah, certainly. I guess it's a testament that the program works pretty well. I did the school tour. I wasn't actually there on the day, but I did the assignment based around it, and then got in touch midway through uni with Chris Knight, the environmental manager, and sort of put my resume on the line, and he got back to me and I was doing vocational work.
Yeah, that's awesome. Georgia, where do you think most people our age are getting their information about the industry? You know, do we need to expand where we're finding information? What needs to happen in that space?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a bit of a two-pronged problem. For being a female in this industry, I think it's straight away you can't be what you can't see. So I think all these women that I've had the pleasure of working with and all the ones I meet at events like these and surrounding me, I think this is where people should get their information from, direct from the source, just networking, go chat, which means that we need to be visible in those environments. And I feel like the second part to it is the support from particularly our tertiary education, so our universities. I can only speak for the university I went to, but I know that my university really did not actively... They didn't actively support nor put down the mining industry, but by closing the geology department and in the Hunter Valley, so not allowing people to study anything to do with geology in a heavy mining region, it's not good enough. And the same goes with all those programs that exist, grad programs and work experience. Is the unis aren't even offering this as an option. So unless you've had that experience in mining, you know, through a family connection, you really don't know what's out there. And unfortunately, the place where we're studying to get that knowledge isn't telling us either. So I think it's got to come back to it. The full circle's got to shift. People have got to make up their own minds and you know, not buy into that propaganda, that media, which, I think we're shifting in that direction. But also, yeah, those facilities need to tell us and show us that the decisions we're making are the right ones. By removing a degree, it's not putting a lot of faith in that pathway, which, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to some young guys here on Sunday night after the Future Leaders Connect event and talking about, you know, the University of Wollongong was a latest one who nearly lost their, you know, mining engineering program.
Mm.
How can we possibly encourage people to get into the industry if we're faced with losing, you know, the pathway?
Yeah, geology. I think the closest they've got to go to is like Armidale.
Yeah.
I think if they want to do a geology degree, you can pick parts at Uni Newcastle, but you've got to drive and do your week-long practicals in Armidale, and nobody's paying for that accommodation or the double rent you're going to be paying. So they really just need to make it more accessible on that end as well, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Sienna, I want to come back to you. I mentioned that you're out at Dartbrook Mine. Mining wasn't your first career choice, and it's actually quite a funny story what your first choice was. Take us back.
Yeah, so when I was at school, loved science, loved chemistry in particular, and wanted to go into medicine. I grew up in Gladstone in central Queensland, so it's really, really industry dense part of the country, particularly in the sort of resource processing space. And all around me were engineers and tradespeople and everyone that was involved in these processing roles, but they were all men. And I will come back to the funny story. but
we love a tangent.
Yeah, we'll go on a tangent. But, yeah, it's kind of on the topic of talking about how important education is in playing a role in shaping the future generations, sort of not influencing the decisions is the right way of putting it. But it wasn't until I attended a program, another school program, through Queensland Minerals and Energy Academy that I had that exposure and that representation from those really phenomenal female leaders in those technical roles that sort of pushed me towards the engineering space. But yes, amid my medicine journey, I had attended a week of track experience, like your grade 10 back work, and was in a GP clinic, and spent the week watching a series of minor procedures. Yeah, didn't stomach it well, had a little bit of a faint in the middle of somebody's
That's procedure. Definitely a sign this isn't the industry for you.
Yeah, it was a good turning point, so moved away from that. But yeah, then sort of started to look at the engineering space, and yeah, I love it. It's
yeah.
Super fun.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people listening have seen what's going on at Dartbrook, quite uncertain, I guess. As a young person starting out in the industry, does what's happening make you question the industry that you're going into?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's been challenging. It's been very challenging. But I think one of the most attractive parts about mining is the scale. You know, we've got big trucks, big tons, big businesses, and that same scale is then echoed to the challenges that we face. I definitely underestimated the weight of the emotional side of the whole process, but that's also been a reminder of the camaraderie that's quite special about mining. How difficult it is to see people go reminds you that we are in an industry that we really value each other and our people.
Yeah, it's always a great experience for you to have at the start of your career.
It's a good learning opportunity.
It's a great learning opportunity.
Yeah. No, definitely probably around that people space, sort of going through any challenges and learning opportunity, but learning how to support people and what they actually need has been really beneficial.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I know that a lot of you would have some funny stories from your career so far. I tried to think of like a pun or something or a fun name for this hard quiz. Hard quiz. There we go. We've got it. So I've got a bunch of questions in the hard hat. I want you to draw one out, whatever it is, and answer it for me. So, Julius, do you want to start for us?
Yeah, why not? Wow, this is a bit of a doozy. If you could sit down with a rising tide protester, what would you tell them?
Wow. So many things.
Yeah, we've got a few things. I guess everyone's entitled to their own opinion and you've got to respect difference, so that's really important. But I think that perhaps disrupting a supply chain isn't an effective way of getting a point across, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess on that too, I'm sure like me, you guys would have friends who have their opinions on the industry. How do you tackle that conversation with a friend?
Mm. I was actually chatting to some people last night and I remembered when I first got my job with Glencore, and again, Enviro student at the Uni Newcastle. So I'm surrounded by a lot of other Enviro students with a lot of different opinions. And I remember just reflecting back on having to almost either one, feel made to feel ashamed about the role I'd taken. You're an Enviro, why would you go to a mine? So feeling ashamed or having to defend my decision. And I just think nobody else in any other role, you know, you don't ask doctors why they choose to do what they do, and nobody else has to defend their choice of profession. So I think it got to the point of initially, that bit of, I just tell them I'm an Enviro and I wouldn't drop where I'd work. And it's gotten to the point now after being in the industry and experiencing it for long enough that I truly am proud of the work I do. So I guess nowadays, what do I do to have those conversations? Well, all the important people in my life, it's been 3 years in the industry, so I've probably already given them the spiel. But otherwise, I think I like to just tell people that I'm a realist, and you know, we can have all of these big dreams about a transition, but at the end of the day, nobody's crunched those numbers, and the numbers we have crunched about what that would look like, you know, the amount of new mines we'd have to open up to mine, the amount of minerals required, you know, you can fight it with facts. You can fight it with, go and read the science and tell me otherwise. It's just a bit of a, go and inform yourself. I can guide you in that. I can send you some things. I can guide you in the right things to read. But stop reading Facebook. Go and educate yourself. And then we can have a discussion. Like, as Julia said, you can have differing opinions, but the only way you're open to changing that is by hearing others. So I'm still always reflective on what people say, because at the end of the day, lots of what they're saying isn't wrong in terms of we do emit greenhouse gases and we do cause environmental destruction in a way. But what they're always missing out on is that other side of it, our investment in communities and how it's people's jobs and how we return these ecosystems back to sometimes better than they were beforehand. So usually I just say to the person, you got part of that story there. You know, fill in those gaps. I'll help you fill them, and then we can discuss. I think, I don't think anybody should have to defend their profession. So I'm pretty firm on that now. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had a similar experience with my friends sort of questioning sort of the values around. I think mining is hugely misunderstood. I think my approach is usually just to encourage people to get involved and to understand what we're doing. I think also it's really important to understand life cycle analyses and understand the full picture of what the alternatives are. But I always will also encourage people, if they're passionate about making a change, get involved. Definitely. You know, pursue education and technology, help bridge that gap where we have space to find that symbiotic balance between sustainable energy practices and fossil fuels. You know, there's so much space to work together. We all need it, so just embrace it.
And I think definitely being proud of your work is something that you should be allowed to find joy in and not have to hide. I know at work, if we complete some rehab and it looks really good, makes me happy. And I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
So you should be. All right, Sienna, your turn. Draw a quiz question out of the hat.
What is the coolest thing about my job? Oh, that's so easy. It's the people. Whenever anybody asks me what I love about my job, it is how mining draws people from all different walks of life together. I often will be sitting in a meeting and look around the room, or sitting in a pre-start, look around the space and think, there's so many people here that I wouldn't have the opportunity to have probably run into in life in any other way.
Yeah.
I think having everyone from all those different experiences means you can just absorb all that wisdom from everyone, not only a professional sense, but also just the life advice. I love it.
Yeah.
Great people. Yeah.
I think hands down, like, I would say the same. The amount of people, cool people with cool jobs, but also the stuff everyone does in their spare time. Things you wouldn't even imagine.
Yep, absolutely.
It's so, so cool.
Very cool. Mm.
All right, pass the hat all the way down to Georgia.
Do you have a funny story from your time on site or vacation work or something in the industry that you can share? I do. And I had to think about this because I think I've had many, many funny moments, but this is the one that stuck. I was only 2 weeks into my first grad rotation and I was up in Rolleston Open Cut Mine up in central Queensland. So my first ever experience in an open cut mine, also my first experience with land clearing activities. So I was accompanying my colleague JD out there, the senior advisor, to learn about how we clear trees. And we'd done all the mulching and everything, and we were walking behind the dozer. You know, he'd knock a tree down, we'd check it. And there was this one tree he knocked down, and I remember hearing him go over the radio, "Beehive in this one, stay away." And we were like, okay, perfect. We'll come back and check that tomorrow, just in case. So we gave it the widest berth we possibly could have, like 250 metres away from this beehive we walked. And out of nowhere, it's just my colleague and I out there, I'm getting swarmed. Seven of these black wasp European bee things. I'm talking, he's standing next to me and these wasps, I had my visor on my hard hat and my hair down. They got up and under and I got stung on the neck.
Oh,
I got stung on the arm. I got stung everywhere. He was next to me. He was swatting them from me and they wouldn't leave me alone. I ran 100 metres to the car. He's like, get to the car. I'm like, lost my radio, lost my hard hat, lost my gloves. I was flailing trying to get these wasps on me. And then I had to go back to the office, had to go see the paramedic because he's like, have you been stung by these things before? And I said, we don't know what these things were. So am I anaphylactic to this? Who knows?
Oh my
and then
God.
I had to go put an incident report in. CMW attacked by swarm of wasps during rehab, like clearance activities. Everybody knew who it was. I tried to keep it anonymous. And then my nickname at Rolleston after week two was Wasp Girl.
Yes.
So
I still carry that.
And I'm still scared of any form of hive I see in a tree now.
Totally
you won't find me near them. I'm not going through that at the new site.
That's great. Can either of you top that story?
Probably not one that I can say here, perhaps.
I don't think I can top it, but I had a similar sort of initiation. It wasn't intentional initiation, but when I completed my first VAC program, I was up in Queensland as well, in Claremont with Glencore, and one of the ERT leaders came up to me in the mess one morning and said, hey, we really need somebody to support our training. Didn't mention it was on a Sunday, found that out later. That was a tough one when all the other VAC students headed to Airlie Beach for the weekend.
Oh.
But essentially ended up spending my Sunday afternoon strapped to a spinal board getting carried down the stairs of a dump truck. So that was a bit of an adventure as well.
Yay! Oh, there's so much that happens on site that I'm sure you probably can't even talk about here. Maybe we'll talk about those after. Now, I wanted to talk to you guys about technology as well. Obviously, we're in that younger generation. We're really open and embracing technology. And I know that on each of your sites, there's some awesome technology happening. I'll start with you, Sienna, because you were telling me about some awesome tech that's happening underground.
Yeah, we've got something super exciting. So underground at Dartbrook at the moment, we've recently brought our PBE technology online. So it's essentially a continuous miner that's trialled by a series of modular enclosed conveyor modules. There's some really cool cool advances with this tech. So firstly, it's entirely operated from the surface in a remote operating center that sits above a box cut. We've also got a gamma sensor integrated in this, so it's able to track the coal seam to optimize our production. And finally, we've got the proximity detection. So proximity detection is commonly seen in open cut pits, but less so underground. And it's really cool. It communicates to the equipment via the coal mine workers' cap lamps, and that's able to implement a series of different controls depending what distance they are to the equipment. So varies from setting off alarms to completely shutting down the system. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
How about over at Rix's Creek, Julius?
Yeah, we have a really cool system that does predictive noise monitoring or modelling. So it runs a model that's, I think, 24 hours in advance, and it shows us the pit shell, and then you actually can run the model inverse to see where the noise is being generated and then where the noise is going to be. So that takes into account meteorological conditions at the time too. So we can predict during a night if we're going to have an inversion, which is a cool, dense layer of air, and where the noise is going to be forecast to be.
Yeah.
So we can put our noise monitor in that spot.
It's so cool to see so much different technology. And we've seen heaps here at the conference as well over the last couple of days, and the winners from last night, which is awesome. How about over at United Wombo?
I think it's technology that's very known in the industry, but I think it's technology that has so much potential and a much further way to go. It just like drone seeding and your aerial imagery and aerial sensing. United Wombo just drone seeded for the first time, which was pretty cool. And that was obviously it's an expensive process because it's done out of house. You have to get somebody in to do it. However, obviously when you weigh up that cost benefit against putting, you know, an operator on those certain rehab slopes, paying someone to bring a drone in and do it in half the time and at the factor of safety of nobody's life at risk, it makes a lot of sense. And I think in both that drone seeding and going into the drone weed management and using aerial sensing and all of the computer learning models can, you know, it's at a point where you can ask it to fly an area, it'll identify all of those weeds for you, and you can basically send that drone to spray those weeds. So it's not something that United's gotten to at that level yet, but I think it's a technology in the industry that, you know, we're not all just operators or scientists or you know, engineers. There's that IT side of it too that I think is largely unrecognized and untapped to date. So
yeah,
I think it's got a lot further to go.
Yeah, definitely. Now, we are unfortunately getting towards the end of our time up here, but I do want to ask you all before we go, where you guys are the future of our mining industry, right? You've all got long careers ahead of you. When I ask you about the future of mining, what are your first thoughts?
It'll still be here and we'll still be doing a lot of mining.
Yeah.
Like the future is going to require minerals and we're going to have to extract them. So there's certainly that. In my role as an enviro, I think my future is pretty promising because there's always going to be land to put back.
Yeah.
So it's good for career longevity, I guess. I picked that one well. But no, I think mining's going to be around and it's going to have a presence in the valley in one form or another, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's really exciting. I sort of mentioned it before, but what that tech space has to offer around, we've got, you know, the new age of AI, how we can use that to our benefit, and just... Yeah, there's some pretty cool things that are happening in that space. So I think tech is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a bit of a, I mean, again, this is just my personal view, but I feel like the transition, it's going to be less of a scale down of coal and more of a scale up in technology. I think that's where it's got to be. Until we see that investment in technology increase, I think coal will be here to stay in some aspects, whether that's just for met coal and melting steel, because can't make a wind turbine without steel, people.
That's exactly
lots of people forget about that. Concrete, you know, all of these things that we use that I don't think people realize coal is really important in generating. And so I do see a strong future for mining. Will it look vastly different? Absolutely. But will technology help us continue to operate in more sustainable ways? I do think so. I just think there needs to be more investment. And one thing I got told in my VAC program, and it stuck with me, can't remember who told me, but they said that there's never been a more exciting time to be in the industry as a young professional. You're going to see coal mining at its absolute glory, at its full operational capacity, everybody going well, but we're also very likely to witness I think at the time, 3 years ago, they said the downfall. But, you know, we're also very likely to witness that entry into the unknown. And what is that transition? Nobody knows. So I think to be a young professional in here right now, I think the future's bright in the fact that we'll always have jobs, but will our jobs look very different? Potentially. But I'm excited to see where it takes me.
Yeah, exactly. On that awesome note, everyone who's here, can we have a round of applause for our guest this afternoon? Now, this episode of Digging Deeper will be up on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and our website, coalface.net.au. So make sure you check it out. And thanks for being here.